Hello, everyone, and welcome to What Women Must Know. I'm your host, Dr. Cheryl Selman, and it is such a pleasure to have you with me today. We have another wonderful conversation in store for you that will really assist to empower you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decision possible. And that's what this show is all about. It's empowering you with truthful information to make informed decisions. So I hope you'll be staying with me because this is such an informative show today. If you are just joining me, I invite you to visit my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because that's a place where you get a lot of great information. If you opt in there, you'll be able to get several of my free reports. I have many of my articles. This show, which will be archived, is always sent to my list. You'll also be able to navigate over to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, because I do daily posts of great information, interviews, videos. It's a place where I can share so much of the information that I have been gathering and continue the educational process because, as always, in this day and age or whenever, getting truthful information will really support us in being able to maneuver through the challenges of our life safely. So I hope you come along and enjoy the learning process. It's quite a revelation. I always like to stay right there at the leading edge of things. And to that point, we are going to be having a conversation that will be taking you to the leading edge today. I have a wonderful guest who is coming to us today all the way from Brazil. And he is Dr. Mark Circus. He is an acupuncturist, doctor of oriental and pastoral medicine. He is a prolific writer and author who really always takes us not only to the place where we are empowered with strategies and knowledge to really make a difference in our health and the health of our loved ones, but he always challenges the status quo. I really relate to that model, another heretic out there in the world. For many years, Dr. Circus has been researching into the human condition and into the causes of disease and has distilled many of the divergent medical systems to an essence that provides a roadmap toward a unified medicine that can be practiced by all. His method, which he coined natural allopathic medicine, is solidly based in medical science. And though his books are heavily referenced to researchers and clinicians from around the globe, the layperson finds little difficulty in understanding his presentation of medical topics. Dr. Circus's work represents a revolution in medical thinking, laying the groundwork for a future of medicine free from the poisonous reign of pharmaceutical companies. He envisions a future for medicine that is rational, effective, and safe. And today we're going to be discussing his latest book. It's an e-book, actually, called The Changing Landscape of Cancer. And we're going to be sharing with you some very profound and very practical strategies that you need to know about in dealing with cancer. Statistically, I believe it's one out of two of us will be diagnosed with cancer in a lifetime. And I don't know what it's like in your world, but in mine, I have just recently had many acquaintances, many friends being diagnosed with cancer. It's really come around into my universe. And, of course, it's always important to be knowledgeable and to really understand what this health challenge is all about. So I'm looking forward to a fantastic time today to give us the kind of roadmap to support all of us on this healing journey. So, Dr. Circus, welcome to the show today.
Well, thanks for having me, Dr. Cheryl.
I have known about you for many, many years. Of course, you are out there, even though you're tucked away out there in the jungles of Brazil. I think you are tucked away in the jungles of Brazil. Is that true?
Well, actually, I'm back. I've built a sanctuary in the jungles, but I'm actually back on the northeast coast on the beach because of the need for internet connection, which I don't have at the end of the world in the jungles.
Right. I was wondering how you managed to stay in touch when you lived in the jungle. So I guess you just have the best of all worlds down there.
Yeah, well, I've been down here. I'm from New York, but originally, but I've been here 21 years, and it's basically against my religion to even think about going back to the United States for a minute.
Yeah, it's wonderful to find your paradise and your spot in the world. And it's nice to know you can do your work from anywhere in the world as well.
Yes, it's been very nice, and it's probably been one of the reasons I've been able to develop my work this far, that I've been writing and publishing, but I'm out of the mainstream. I'm out of the very difficult to attack me here in Brazil. I mean, I can basically say what I want pretty freely because I write in English and everything gets published in the first world, not here. So it's been very good for me and my work, giving me the freedom to develop it.
Yeah, it's like a sanctuary for you to carry on.
Yes, yes.
Well,
so it's very interesting we're going to have this conversation tonight. You know, looking at your book, and since Sunday, it's about 3 weeks ago, actually exactly 3 weeks ago, I had a very bad attack of GERD, of acid reflux. Mm-hmm. And it's really put me down for like 3 weeks and forced me to totally change my diet. And Sunday night, I started writing about sugar and cancer and sugar and disease in general and inflammation and insulin and this whole mix of factors. And I've written 3 chapters in 3 days and a groundbreaking book of a chapter on sugar and cancer, very definitive for me. And just before we got on the phone, on the show, I found a Dr. Christine Horner, who wrote an essay about how high insulin and sugar increase breast cancer risk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's a brilliant short article and talks about how, and this is just another pathway, how when a person eats too much sugar, which just about everybody does except the health food fanatics, how the spiking of insulin also has a great effect on estrogen and its availability. Higher levels of insulin free estrogen levels go up. So this has been just a very fascinating time and making all these connections to, you know, I'm afraid, I'm embarrassed to say that even though I'm a doctor of pastoral medicine and a doctor of honorary doctor of Chinese medicine, that, you know, I've been a sugar addict most of my life, and I'm 60 years old and I got away with it. And I never got cancer and I didn't get diabetes. And I really didn't have any problems until now. And now it's finally my own body stopped me dead in my tracks, forcing me to look at something that is so basic, the cancer treatment and one of the basic causes of cancer. Now, of course, my work through these years has been very concentrated on magnesium and the combined anvil and hammer being caught between deficient nutritional levels, malnutrition, and a lot of chemical toxicity. But I never looked at sugar as being one of the most toxic substances of all, especially the simple sugars, the white sugars, and you know, I always looked at them being mineral deficient foods and as such poisons. But the sugar content itself and what it does to insulin is amazing in its effect for bringing us to cancer.
Well, I guess we all have our blind spots.
Yes.
but you know, I mean, this makes perfect sense to me, having spent many, many, many years researching hormones and all the root cause issues. There's a direct correlation between high insulin, high estrogen, high cortisol, low thyroid, low progesterone, and how that pattern sets up many chronic illnesses, including cancer. So this is really a critical point that people need to understand. And sugar, which, as you said, it is so prolific. I I have a number that I researched. It was 175 pounds a year the average American is consuming. So, you know, more or less, you know. But we need to see it as a deadly toxin that is generating chronic illnesses. In fact, one of the conferences I attended, and this statistic always stuck with me, that cancer cells have something like 10 to 14 times more insulin receptors than healthy cells. They just love that sugar.
Yeah, they certainly do. Well, we love the sugar, so our cancers love it even more than we do.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, I know these are some of the issues that we're going to be exploring today, because cancer is always such a mystery for people when they get a diagnosis. And I was just looking at something you wrote about how it creates such a shock in the system when you get a diagnosis. Maybe we can start there. What those, you know, those words that, you know, you've been diagnosed with whatever stage cancer has on people's emotional state and, of course, their physical state. And then let's explore some of the, as you call it, changing landscapes of cancer. What are some of the empowering facts that we need to know and strategies that we need to know to protect us, to keep us healthy, or if we do find we're dealing with a diagnosis of cancer, some of the strategies we can start implementing in our healing process?
Well, actually, I want to start an international hotline for people who are newly diagnosed with cancer to help them through those first few days, because it's a very stressful time, to say the least. And that stress itself will inflame and spur on the cancer. So it's critical how doctors, you know, talk to people about cancer and, of course, the kind of suggested treatments. And just the suggested treatments that come out of most doctors' mouths in the mainstream of oncology is enough to frighten anybody right into their grave. So it's a very intense moment. One of the things I suggest for everybody, including newly diagnosed cancer patients, is something from Russia that I started using about 2 months ago. It costs $50, and it's a little breathing device that a Russian scientist developed 15 years ago for asthma sufferers who start breathing too fast or hyperventilating to the point where they could just pass out. This little device, where you blow bubbles through it. You breathe in slowly through the nose, and you blow out through this machine, little device, and blow bubbles, and it slows your breath down. The slower we breathe, the more relaxed we are, the more our heart comes into its, you know, nice rhythm, how our oxygen levels go up as we breathe slower because our carbon dioxide level goes up. So it's like putting the brakes on everything, blowing bubbles. I published an essay a couple weeks ago about this, blowing bubbles for cancer, I guess it was called. It's really hard to die when you're breathing slow. So it's a very powerful getting, you know, putting reins around your breath and slowing it down like you'd pull back on the reins of a horse. So it's one of the first things I recommend, and it's something that will help throughout anybody's cancer therapy because it increases oxygen, and cancer doesn't like oxygen.
You know,
so for $50, you already have a mainline, a treatment and therapy for cancer. Course, the best of which increase oxygen levels.
So, Dr. Circus, this little device makes you aware of your breath. Is that the purpose of it?
Well, it makes you aware, but it literally slows you down. So you can go to a yoga master or yoga teacher and take months and start learning how to breathe. You breathe through the belly instead of the chest where the diaphragm goes down and slow it down. You can practice breathing. And it takes weeks, months to really get effect. This gives you an effect the first day. I mean, some people it's very difficult to do because their breathing is so bad. You know, the more progressive you are in chronic disease, the faster you're breathing. So this machine slows me down almost to 2 breaths a minute right away, within a minute or two, when normally when I started 2 months ago, I was breathing around 12 a minute, and I'm a healthy person.
Right, right.
So literally it's a physical thing that slows you down, and so you get the therapeutic effect, you know, very quickly. You can practice it 2-3 times a day, and within a few days, if you make progress, it's going to change how you breathe and how much oxygen is flowing through the blood.
And also slowing down that autonomic nervous system or the sympathetic nervous system for sure, so we can relax and healing
yes.
happens.
Oh, it's like we have a word in Brazil here. It's chupeta, what babies suck on. It's just wonderful. It just helps you relax.
Like that little pacifier.
It physiologically slows you down. It's wonderful. I love it. And it's really helped me in the last few weeks with this whole attack with GERD.
Well, that's great. I'm sure people can find out more about how to order that on your website, correct?
Yes. Go back about a month or so. My main site, by the way, which is changing in the next few days, we are taking my 22 sites and my 17-year-old son, who's been working for a year on this, is boiling it all down to a portal site, 22 sites to one, called drcircus.com, and that should be launched like Saturday or Sunday.
Well, that's great that all 22 of your websites,
yeah,
that'll
22.
Make it very handy for all of us.
Yeah, it's going to simplify his life. So,
So let's go back and talk about cancer. So from your research, what could you say the overarching issues are that cause the body to create a condition we call cancer?
Well, it's complicated and simple at the same time. It's very sweeping, and I have different books about the different aspects of this. One of the most difficult aspects for people to deal with and doctors to deal with, which I'll be specifically putting into my breast cancer and prostate cancer book, is what I call the soft side of medicine, are people's emotions and their conflicts, the stress levels, sexual satisfaction levels, and satisfaction with touch in general. These issues of, you know, who we really are outside of our body. And we can discuss things that are not, even though they relate to the body, or something beyond the body, which is our mind and emotions and our spirit. So this is and some doctors, there's one doctor from Italy who created this thing called the New Medicine. They say all, and I hate this word, all cancers are caused by emotional shocks or conflicts that are unresolved because it changes the brain and et cetera, et cetera. So this is one whole area, but this is not the only factor, not by a long shot. Going to the other extreme, what we eat. Now, as I mentioned, I've been spending days writing about cancer and sugar and how sugar, eating all these carbohydrates, and we can talk about that as a separate subject and what is so poisonous about that, but all of this sugar creates an acidic condition in us, and we become acidic, our pH drops, and we get inflamed. So this is a general backdrop, the difference between somebody who eats a lot of sugar and this corn syrup, this corn fructose, which has mercury in it from the way it's made. A lot of it has mercury in it. It's a very toxic type of food, and it sets us up again for cancer. So this is the other extreme. And then running us over like 10 buses coming right down the, you know, four-lane highway, we have all kinds of chemical exposures, we have radiation exposures, we have the stupid government putting fluoride in our water, public water, we have the chlorine in the water, we have fumes living in cities from all the pollution, all this chemicals is running down into our system, some of which it mimics estrogen. And then on the other side, standing against these all this onslaught of poisons, forgetting about the stress we're feeling and freaking out with, is the our defenses, which is magnesium, selenium, calcium, our hydration levels, all these basic things that we need in our body to handle just normal life, forgetting about super stressed out life, living, across the bay from Fukushima or something. So, unfortunately, the world is eating garbage, all the white foods, white rice, white bread, white sugar, white salt. All of these things don't have any minerals. So people are just, sitting there, totally weak, with very little magnesium and selenium in them, and they're being clobbered by all these poisons, and they just can't stand up to it. So, and right in the middle of all of this, of course, is inflammation, acidity, conditions just getting out of hand, and of course, in the low, all the viruses and bacteria and the fungus and the mold and the mildew, all this stuff loves to start growing inside of us, and then we call it cancer when it totally gets out of hand. So that's the best I can do in a simple.
So, we just, it really is a consequence of everything that's going on in our culture that never really existed before. I think we have to all realize that this one out of two statistic is really unique to this moment in time, that we weren't dealing with cancer on this level throughout history. This is a relatively new phenomenon. And if you just have to look at our world to understand the toxicity and the nutritional deficiencies and the stress are all creating a perfect storm that puts our body under so much stress. And unless we have strategies and begin to take responsibility for our health, we're very vulnerable. We're kind of sitting ducks.
Most people are, and the government and doctors and medical organizations seem to like that, like to keep people just vulnerable.
Well, you have written a lot about magnesium, and I think we need to talk a little bit about it because, first of all, you're such an expert on the subject, but also because it plays such a major role in our health, and we all seem to be very deficient in it. I don't think people truly appreciate how important and significant magnesium is to our overall health and well-being.
Well, I put together, and I'll be publishing probably about a month, about the first of the year, my protocol for natural allopathic medicine and for the treatment of cancer, and it's an 18-component protocol. Some of the elements are very complicated or offer many different variables, but no matter, and each of those 18 components is very, very powerful. But what's maintained the number one slot, and I wanted to put water and breathing number one and two, but number one is still magnesium. Magnesium goes to the very heart of life, and people don't realize that, and the heart of medicine and the heart of health. Without magnesium, we're all dead. There is no life on this planet. It brings life to the planet through its placement in the exact heart of chlorophyll. It's what makes plants green. It gives plants the capacity to capture sunlight and turn it into food or chemical energy. You take that magnesium atom out of chlorophyll and you put an iron atom in, and now we have hemoglobin. So and magnesium levels are very important when it comes to the appropriate function of red blood cells and hemoglobin, the shape of hemoglobin. So I call it the lamp of life, because it literally is involved with light and the transmutation of light into chemical energy. It's also like the oil. It's so important, I call it the oil. And in fact, the product that I have backed for many years now is called magnesium oil. And it is like the oil to the body, or like oil is to an engine. It lubricates, or it is involved in almost every physiological interaction in the body, just about everything, especially the most basic things like helping the cell wall stay soft so things can get in and out, which, of course, is essential for cell life. So the people get it, magnesium is so powerful in terms of as medicine that if you're dying and you have 30 seconds left before you leave your body and a doctor injects it into you, he'll save your life. He'll bring you right back. And, of course, it's used in the better hospitals and the emergency room departments, but they usually use the pharmaceuticals first, and when the pharmaceuticals don't use it, don't work, then they come to the magnesium and they inject it.
Wow.
If you have a stroke and you happen to be fortunate to live in Los Angeles and an ambulance that's involved in these this experiment that's been going on for 5 years pulls up to your door and they see you're having a stroke, they will inject right away magnesium salts because it will right away stop the stroke and alleviate the all the damages that come from the stroke if they catch it quick enough. That's why they give the technicians and the ambulance the permission to do that. That's a part of a study.
Well, that's
so
fascinating. Dr. Sorkis, what is it about magnesium that can have such an immediate effect on someone who's dealing with a stroke?
Well, as I say, it's, I mean, one of its broadest effects is it's an anti-inflammatory. It controls calcium. Calcium is one of the biggest enemies, especially with cancer. Things get calcified, they get more rigid, and things don't move around so fast. Magnesium is a soft, it relaxes, it calms, it's a distress, it's good for depression. It's a de-inflammatory, and it just calms people. You take a hot magnesium bath and with bicarbonate before bed and put you right to sleep.
Right.
It's very relaxing. But the answer really is in the deepest level of physiology. Right. Once you get out of the very basics of life, hydrogen, oxygen, you know, water, carbon dioxide, this level of basic life, magnesium is like a catalyst for organization, for making things work. So when you, if you're a cancer, like, any kind of, forget about breast cancer for a second, if anything, you know, beneath that, any kind of inflammation, any kind of problems with the breast, one of the nicest treatments is just to cover the breast with this magnesium oil and let it penetrate through the tissues. It softens the breath, it heals the breasts. It's topical.
Right.
You can drink it, of course. You can inject it. You can nebulize it. But it's very, very nice stuff to use topically.
You know, I once woke up with a stiff neck, and I had some magnesium oil. I just massaged it into the area where that muscle was really in contraction, and it's like instantaneously it just disappeared. You know, there was no muscle spasm at all. It was so, it really was a revelation to see how quickly magnesium really affected me.
One of the things that very, very few people have looked at, and which, of course, I concentrated on my book and on diabetes, is that magnesium also is instrumental in controlling insulin levels and insulin receptivity. So if you have good, really good magnesium levels, you can have more sugar. Your body will withstand the abuse because it will regulate things. But if you've been eating white rice and white bread forever and white spaghetti, your magnesium levels are low. So when you abuse your body with sugar, it's more of a shock. So it's very important with insulin regulation, and insulin, of course, is instrumental in stimulating the formation of breast cancer. So,
well, we're about to take a short break, but when we get back, Dr. Sorkis, I want you to share with my listeners the kind of magnesium supplements that you think are the most effective, and then we can go on and talk more about other important components for our health, such as iodine. And then a few other things that I want you to be discussing as well. So we have lots more to explore in the next part of our show. I encourage everybody to hang in there. Don't go away. This is life-saving information. You are listening to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and we are having a wonderful conversation with Dr. Mark Sorkis, author of The Changing Landscape of Cancer. And we'll be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. We are talking to Dr. Mark Zirkus, and he is the author of many, many books. Today, we're talking about his latest book called The Changing Landscape of Cancer. And by the way, it is available as an ebook, so it's really affordable, fantastic information, and you can just get it by going up to his website. Dr. Zirkus, what's the best address? I know you're about to create a major portal. Where should people be going to get more of your information and to order your ebooks? Dr. Zirkus, are you there? Oh, dear. Okay, we've lost him for the moment, but he's going to be coming back in. And I just want to recap for people who've been listening to us, and we'll wait and get Dr. Zirkus back on the line. He's calling in from Brazil. But we were talking about some of the critical things that he has been discovering and researching that contribute to cancer and also help for those who are recovering and healing from cancer. So I just want to review that because it's really important. So first of all, we need to understand the role of our breath and how important our breath is and the ability to have slow, deep breaths. It's really interesting how breathing has been a part of all the healing traditions, all the spiritual traditions. I think they kind of converge because as we connect more to our spiritual place of peace, we also access more of our healing power. So they're very much connected. And I just want to say that in my many, many years as a psychotherapist, the breath was the key thing that I taught in my sessions and also practiced in my own life. So I saw miracles happen when people were able to breathe. And I think we have Dr. Zirkus back. Are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, good. I'm glad the lines are working between here and Brazil. I just wanted to recap a little bit while I was waiting for you to get back onto the line and some of the key points we made. We talked about the breath. We're talking about magnesium as well. And I wanted to get your opinion on what forms of magnesium you think are the most effective and what you recommend for people to be using. And while we're doing that, also, what is the percentage of people who are magnesium deficient?
Well, in the United States, the official number, I guess it comes from MIT, is 67%. But that's based on all the blood testing of magnesium levels that they've done through the years. And the last place that shows deficiency is the blood. The cells lose their magnesium completely to the blood because the blood has to be controlled because you go into instant cardiac arrest if the magnesium drops too low in the blood. So I would say about 90 to 95%, and if you're a cancer patient or any suffering from any serious disease, then I would say it's about 99.9% chance that you're magnesium deficient.
Yeah, that's staggering, isn't it, when you think about how huge that deficiency is?
The same thing actually can be said for iodine. Almost everybody, Dr. Brownstein in Detroit, tested 5,000 of his patients and found 95.7% were pretty radically iodine deficient, pretty much. And you could say the same thing for bicarbonate. People are very bicarbonate deficient. And that's one of the basic reasons we slide into diabetes and heart disease and then eventual cancer.
And we should throw in vitamin D, too, don't you think?
Say again?
I think we should throw into that mix vitamin D as well. People are severely deficient.
Keep adding to the list, of course, the crazy doctors, the dermatologists. They're warning people to stay out of the sun when just the opposite. You should be stepping in the sun, getting a little pink every day without sunscreens. This is healthy.
Yeah. So let's go back to magnesium for a minute. What kind of magnesium do you recommend? Because I do believe all people should be taking magnesium.
Yes. The most useful and versatile and purest magnesium comes from underground Europe. It comes from a 250-million-year-old sea that's trapped down there, and it turned into a sea of magnesium chloride, and they pump it up, and it's like the purest thing on the planet. It's just There's no mercury in it. There's no nothing. No lead. So it's most magnesium supplements. The problem is there's a little too much lead in them. So magnesium chloride. This is magnesium chloride. It's magnesium from the sea. You can use seawater evaporation to make it. But this stuff from Europe, it's sold under this label, ancient minerals. Mm-hmm. And they have a whole line. They have this ancient minerals oil. In this oil, you can just cover the body with it. I recommend that for all, you know, cancer patients, and they have a massage. It goes seeps into the skin. You can drink this, mix it with water or juice. You can nebulize it, putting drops in the nebulizer. You can pour it in bathtubs and with sodium bicarbonate. So you can dilute it and put it in the eyes for an eye wash. So this magnesium oil is a central product. Then there's other thing. You can get magnesium bath flakes from the same company, but then you can get dead sea salt, which is not just magnesium chloride, but potassium chloride. So it's very nice to put in your bathtub, dead sea salts. For baths, you can even use Himalayan salt, which has all the minerals in it. There's Epsom salt, which again is good mostly for baths, but not as good as the chloride form. So there's many options. My favorite, of course, is this magnesium oil. And that's how it made me famous in the world. I read a book called Transdermal Magnesium Therapy, and I've had more magnesium massages probably than anybody on the planet, and they're just wonderful. I've had one today. Somebody just pours this stuff over you and use it instead of using massage oil. And it gives you a medical treatment.
Wow.
As you're being relaxed. It's a treatment for Cleopatra. It's beautiful.
Can people take too much magnesium? Is there a risk there if you overdo it?
The only person who can take too much magnesium is somebody who's in the hospital dying of kidney failure.
Right.
If your kidneys are gone, or if you're on dialysis, you have to be a little more careful about especially how much you take orally.
Right.
Transdermally is really not such a problem.
Right.
The way it goes into the body, it's a little different.
Right. Let's move on and talk about iodine, because just like there's a connection between magnesium deficiency and increased risk of cancer, so there is a huge connection between iodine deficiencies and cancers. The thyroid, a breast, there's, you know, actually many forms of cancer are associated, or iodine deficiency is connected or a risk factor. So let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that's another topic that people just don't have enough information about.
Yeah, it's another key subject, especially for breast cancer, because breasts, like the prostate, like the thyroid gland, are the glands that concentrate iodine. They need iodine and use iodine more than other tissues. So these glands are very iodine deficient sensitive. One of the nice things about iodine for breast cancer patients is, like with the magnesium, you know, massage and cover the breast and let it seep in. You also every day paint the breasts with iodine. You need to drink a lot of it, but you can paint the breasts with iodine and treat the local tissues. Wonderful thing about iodine. But bottom line, iodine is a very key element in the body, because it's very much involved in metabolism and diseases of, you know, from diabetes to heart disease to cancer involve problems with metabolism. So, and things like iodine is very important in defending us against fluoride, the rocket fuel that's polluted in many of the states in the United States from the government and the military, even from chlorine, from bromide that's in a lot of processed food and drugs, especially white bread, these things, and radiation, like it's coming from Fukushima. You know, they didn't warn everybody when Fukushima blew up. They should have sounded the sirens in the country all over the world and said, everybody get your iodine, because as this cloud, which went across the northern hemisphere, of radioactive iodine. If you didn't have enough iodine in your thyroid, and of course in your breast and your prostate, and the radioactive type came flying by in the air, and you breathe it in, and it gets a little bit into your bloodstream, it doesn't matter how little, the thyroid will grab it, the radioactive type, and it'll lodge it in the thyroid. It's like a sponge. If you don't have enough iodine, it's hunting. It's processing all the blood looking for iodine. So it'll love and suck up the radioactive type, and if it can't get that, it'll suck up the fluoride, which makes fluoride more toxic. So iodine is just, it's the first and most perfect allopathic drug that was ever created. They found out 150 years ago that it cures absolutely goiter. There's no other pharmaceutical that's guaranteed to cure something.
Right.
So, but goiter only happens with extreme magnesium deficiencies. There's plenty of things happen when you're just a little iodine deficient.
So, Dr. Sergis, do you think that the iodine test is relevant? I mean, I have these kits that I make available occasionally to my patients that are able to test the levels of iodine so people know if they are in optimal range or too much, perhaps. What are your thoughts on them?
In general, I'm not into using tests. I like to keep medicine very, very simple. You know, pH strips to test the overall pH, especially when treating cancer, and the color of urine to make sure one is hydrated, things like that. When it comes to certain things like iodine, I just assume the deficiency.
You're
in the over 90% safe area, just assuming. And if a person is sick in any way, then your assumption is almost absolute.
And what's your what's your favorite form of iodine?
Is the Nascent iodine. I personally use two iodines, the Nascent iodine and Lugol's. Lugol's been around for 150 years. It's very inexpensive. It's great for using in quantities when you're painting the breasts and things like that. So it's wonderful, and I like liquid minerals. Liquid minerals are very easy to digest. The Nascent iodine is very different. It's in atomic form. It's like rocket fuel. It's in a form that's very easy for the body to use almost instantly. So you have to use the two different ones, and I always recommend patients get both because the Nascent is too expensive to use for painting.
Right, and I just want to say for people who don't, you know, who aren't familiar, it's Nascent, Nascent iodine.
Correct.
When you're talking about.
Correct. So it's a matter of preference. You know, I'm very sensitive to the cost of things. Because I live in the third world, and there are billions of people who spending, you know, a few dollars a day on treatment is already a lot.
In your arsenal to treat people, it's the magnesium oil, getting iodine, and making sure you are more alkaline. I guess that's where the baking soda, right?
Yeah, baking soda is really good emergency medicine. It's not something you can count on for, you know, forever, like eat a lot of sugar, be really acidic from your diet, and just use bicarbonate to compensate. It's not such a good idea. But if you have cancer and you want to affect the chain, I mean, it's always good to change the diet and cut things off from the source, but bicarbonate gives you a very powerful and instant way to neutralize the acids, calm down the inflammation, neutralize and buffer poisons, and get the conditions into a nice alkaline condition, and do that within 2 or 3 days.
Right.
So that bicarbonate is an excellent medicine. Or if you get a flu, and you're having complications. You know, before they wheel you to the hospital, you start taking bicarbonate, and it'll just chill everything out. is a doctor who wrote in 1926 in a book, a little booklet for Arm & Hammer Company, from the most famous company making sodium bicarbonate for 125 years. A doctor talking about the Spanish flu epidemic that supposedly killed millions, and he said, well, none of my patients died, I just use sodium bicarbonate. So it's another emergency room medicine that just neutralizes acid almost instantly.
Right, right. So he was able to highly alkalinize his patients, and they just were not vulnerable to the flu. Their body was in a more alkaline state.
Right, right. And so it's very, the things I take, well, the first thing I usually grab when I'm starting to feel a little cold coming or flu or anything, and the same goes for my children, I go first for the iodine.
Uh-huh.
If things start, you know, progressing, either every few hours, magnesium, drinking this magnesium oil, you know, with water, and then a blast of alkalinity from the bicarbonate, and it's like you're in an emergency room. It's treating you correctly with
right.
things that are just totally safe
right.
and overwhelmingly powerful.
Right. And as you said, affordable.
And affordable. That's correct. And affordable.
Before we come to the end of the show, I want you to talk a little bit about cannabinoids. And I know you've written recently about cannabinoids, and I think we mm-hmm. need to talk a little bit about what they are and what they do and why you have really been looking into them and promoting them.
Yes. I published a book, I guess, in January, February on the subject. And the good news that I announced about 2 months ago is a company, and now it's becoming popular, is a company in Colorado shipping to the whole world, CBD, which is a legalized form of medical marijuana. It's marijuana without the THC, so it doesn't get you high, but gives you the same medical or pharmaceutical effect. But in general, cannabinoids is a molecule that has a receptor system in the human being. We're built to deal with cannabinoids. So they have a physiological effect on us that nothing else has, because there's nothing else that imitates cannabinoids. So it's a unique substance that is in nature, that God created for us, that if it wasn't illegal in most places, you could grow in your house or in your backyard for almost nothing, and you have almost a prime-class drug at your disposal for pain relief, for stress, for cancer treatment, for any kind of neurological problems. It's a wonderful medicine that's non-toxic. If you know, human beings don't exist without recreational drugs. If you want to include alcohol, it's a huge aspect of humanity. This happens to be, out of all the different drug substances, the safest. Mm-hmm. Not known to kill anybody. There's no information about anybody dying of it. So you get all the upsides, the pharmaceutical upsides, with none of the downsides with this. So for pain, let's talk just about this THC-free marijuana. Whatever pain you have, it has its own unique way of addressing that pain.
Hmm.
If you have cancer, it's attacking the cancer on a different plane, because I always use protocols. I never use and claim that, cure your cancer with sodium bicarbonate. I write a book about it. I'll call it Rich Man, Poor Man's Cancer Treatment. But I would never treat a serious cancer without the help of some cannabinoids.
Really?
This is how the unique function in the body. And the science, of course, backs this up. You can go to Harvard University and look at their studies and the different other universities. You go to Israel, where they're using this very, very much clinically and publishing quite a bit about it. It's a wonder drug. It's another one that's very cheap and inexpensive and useful for so many things.
So it's not only for pain. It actually has actions within the body that support the healing of cancer. So it has a
yes,
different track.
Yes, one of the ways it does that by facilitating communication. It facilitates a type of regulation and harmonization inside the cells through communication, through blending. It's very different. Like when you get high, it changes things. It has a sort of power to just change how you feel, even change how you think. Might even shift, from intellectual, logical thinking to intuitive thinking. It has many different effects. So it's very, pain and stress relief. And for emotional upset. If you believe in the world medicine, the pharmaceutical drugs for any of this, the stuff they make for depression and stress, all create tremendous problems. This doesn't. So there's already been some few famous cases in this past 2 years about saving babies from using it to save babies from cancer.
Wow.
So it's too useful to be. And you forget about
now that
it's
we're seeing. We're opening up to the acceptance and use of marijuana or the cannabinoids in the form that we're talking about, which is good news for us because it makes it more accessible than what it was in the past.
I'm about to publish a book called, I actually have three books that are going to come out in quick succession. The first one, hopefully in about a month, I'm just a few days away from finishing it and giving it to my editors, though I've been saying that for weeks. But I think after these past days writing about sugar, I'm finished. So this book called Treatment Essentials is going to give away the kitchen sink. I've boiled down about 5,000 of my pages of writing into like 300 pages of the practical information on how to practice my protocol.
Right.
Which is really another way of saying how to practice medicine in a very simple way with safe, effective substances. And it's a comprehensive protocol. It gives away the dosages, gives away the precautions, gives away the different ways you can take everything. And then very quickly behind that, I'm also finishing now, is my book called Anti-Inflammatory Cancer Treatment. Using inflammation as the unification, like a grand unification theory to talk about everything. You can put everything around inflammation and put inflammation in the middle, and it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So when you treat cancer, you really need to treat the inflammation that is behind cancer and that drives it. And then, of course, I'll come out with my breast cancer and prostate cancer book, which is... it's a lot into the whole sexual aspect of sexual cancers.
So let's give your website, because I know that people are going to want to be able to access these books.
My current address is blog.imva.info. I'm the director of the International Medical Veritas Association. That's the IMVA. So on the blog, you can go from my blog to my publishing site to my carbonate site and iodine site. And as I said, it'll all be unified next week.
Okay, and just so we know, when you're unified and have that big portal, what's that address?
That'll be drcircus.com.
Okay, fantastic. So people can go to in a week or so to drcircus.com. And
yeah,
right
it's
now...
DR. Circus, SIRCUS.com.
Fantastic. When I send my archives out, I'll have those email addresses so people can follow up. We have just I don't know if that's the music. I know we've come to the end. Do you have a minute or so, Dr. Circus, is there anything else you just wanted to add before we complete this really, really informative and important conversation?
Well, I have to say I was deeply touched by your book about protecting, young girls and women in general from breast cancer, and I think a very important subject, and it's for women and for men. Breasts represent they're not as much sexual organs as they are love organs.
And so, Dr. Thurkos, we need to go. But it's just been a fantastic conversation. I'm so glad you got my book. I really wanted you to have a copy of it. And I just wish you all the best with the wonderful work you're doing in empowering people. Thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You're very welcome. And to all my listeners, thank you for joining me for another empowering show. And remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.